We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 32nd chapter, verses 15 through 19. I'll read verse 15. Sapaitaitva tam anangadipanam sahasalile tsunavi pramaguva sasparshanenanka kichanti hastaya sanstukta isha kupita kahashire. Translation. Shri Krishna had awakened romantic desires within the gopis, and they honored him by glancing at him with playful smiles, gesturing amorously with their eyebrows, and massaging his hands and feet as they held them in their laps. Even while worshipping him, however, they felt somewhat angry, and thus they addressed him as follows. Om Magana Tivarandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshumiritam Yena Tasamal Shri Gurave. So what do you remember from the last class we just had about the gopis and Krishna? Yes, Adipurush.
The first verses. Eight main gopis were described.
Mm-hmm.
They were very compliant, dakshina, right-wing.
Right-wing gopis, compliant.
More submissive, and they were also Brahma, the left-wing.
Left-wing gopis, right-wing and left-wing gopis.
They were more independent.
Right, more contrary. Okay, we heard about two. Yes, Devakaran.
Gopis' hearts are boiling with love for Krishna.
Right. Their burning, hearts were boiling.
And burning with separation.
Burning with separation. Okay. Yes?
Krishna is Bhagavan are like borrowed words.
Yeah, when they say he's Bhagavan, it's like borrowed words.
It's like a poor person would borrow an outfit from a rich neighbor.
Right, like a poor person would borrow an outfit from a rich neighbor. Good. And they call him Super Soul, Ishwara. Then actually, it's borrowed words. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Yes.
Sitting amidst the gopis, Krishna became more beautiful.
Yes, sitting with the gopis, Krishna became more beautiful. It enhanced his beauty when he was with the gopis. How could Krishna become more beautiful? But he does. How could Atmarama have desires? But he does. He wants, he has unlimited desires to enjoy. At the same time, he's Atmarama, self-satisfied. He's Atmarama with ordinary people, but not with his dear devotees. With them, he's attracted. Yes. Okay, the yogis and the great, like Lord Brahma and Shiva, even the great incarnations of the modes of passion and ignorance, with great difficulty, they make a seat for the Lord within their hearts. But the gopis, they just put their chadars down, or shawls, and Krishna sat on their shawls, face to face. Inside. When he disappears from outside, he becomes visible inside. Yes. Our life air wants to go, to find you, to leave our bodies, but you come inside and stop our life airs from leaving. So what can we do? Right, okay, the left-wing gopis think Krishna should come to us, so we shouldn't go to him. The right-wing ones, they go right to Krishna. Oh, you've come. Oh, let me serve you. Yeah, yeah. The ones who are the left-wing are more attached and more attracted. They're angry with him, and they stare at him. Yes?
The gopis please Krishna.
Only for the pleasure of Krishna, their love, right. It's not lust. Okay, yes?
Is Krishna more attracted to one left-wing or right-wing or equal?
He's more attracted to Radharani than anyone. And she's left-wing. That we can say. I don't know about left-wing or right-wing, but we know he's most attracted to Radharani. So that could be that it's the left-wing ones that are most attractive to him. Yes.
Bhaktivinoda
Thakur. Yes, he's on the side of Lalita. Lalita Sakhi. Yes, we are followers of Rupa. We are Rupa Nugas, Rupa Manjari, who is a servant of Lalita, who is in Radharani's side. And so we worship Radhesham. Radhesham. Not Chandravalisham. We don't worship. Prabhupada never established. He established Rukmini, Dwarakadish, and he established like that, but not Radha Parthasarthi, but not Chandravalisham, not Chandravali Krishna. We don't worship. Yes. Maybe in some other universe.
Yeah, but it's surprising because in this universe it's like she's like second, but there's like the
leader.
Like,
are there? Yeah, well, we have, it's all Gaudiya Sampradaya here. Yes, Adi Purusha.
Acha.
Okay, Vallabhacharya, there you go.
His son.
Vallabhacharya. Acha. Okay, there you go.
In connection with Chandravali. Many of them worship Chandravali.
So in the other Sampradayas, she's worshipped. But in Gaudiya Sampradaya.
Was coming to
the retreat. Oh, yeah, is he on? Yeah, yeah, he was from Vallabha Sampradaya. But he didn't mention her name. He didn't mention Chandravali's name. Yes.
The other sampradayas, they don't have conjugal love, do they? And parental love, aren't they a lot lower?
No, they do. They do.
They do?
They do. I think Nimbarka, they worship Radha Krishna. Nimbarka Sampradaya.
Vallabhas
also, yeah. They do have conjugal. But there's something that's missing. I don't have the list, but there's a list. Every sampradaya gave two things. Lord Chaitanya took two things from every sampradaya and combined them. And I don't remember exactly what that was, but the worship, I think deity worship was from Nimbarka. You have that list? You can find it. That every sampradaya contributed, Lord Chaitanya took something from every sampradaya. But they, yes, they do have conjugal rasa. Oh, you have it on your computer. Okay. Okay, here's, okay. You can just stick it. Gaurachandra to Nimbarka. This is from where? Navadvipa Mahatmya. Later, when I will begin the Sankirtan movement, I myself will preach the essence of the four Vaishnava philosophies. From Madhva, I will receive two essential items. His complete defeat of the Mayavad philosophy, Kevala Advaita Nirasana, and his service to the deity of Krishna, accepting the deity as an eternal spiritual being, Krishnamurti Sevana. From Ramanuja, I will accept two great teachings, the concept of bhakti unpolluted by karma and jnana, Ananya Bhakti, and service to the devotees, Bhakti Jana Seva. From Vishnu Swami's teachings, I will accept two main elements, the sentiment of exclusive dependence on Krishna, Tadiya Sarvasva Bhav, and the path of Raga Bhakti, Raga Marg. And from you, Nimbarka, I will receive two excellent principles, the necessity of taking shelter of Radha, Ekanta Radhika Shraya, and the high esteem for the gopi's love of Krishna, Gopi Bhav. There you go. Yes, and as I said in one class previously, that one Shiva Bhakta, when he saw Prabhupada's picture, he said, this man, I can see from his face, all the four sampradayas are within this one person. From his features, he has all the four Vaishnava acharyas are present in him. That's Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada has given us all of the four sampradayas. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. And I know in Nimbarka they worship Radha Krishna, Radharani.
Ramanuja is, I think they only go as far as Dasyaras.
Dasyaras, Ramanuja, it may be. But not all of the sampradayas. Okay, so now we read this verse. Krishna is back with the gopis, and they're glancing at him with playful smiles, gesturing with their eyebrows, massaging his hands and feet as they held them in their laps. But they were somewhat angry, and now they're going to speak in their anger with Krishna from verse 16. But first we'll read a commentary on verse 15. by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, not the whole commentary, just the last paragraph. Pleased with the touch of Krishna's hands and feet, the gopis praised him, "Ah, your feet and hands are extraordinarily cool. Having relieved us of the painful fire of separation, you are truly the pleasing moon who knows no distress or sorrow." After praising Krishna with such sarcastic words, the gopis became slightly angry. Even though their anger had somewhat reduced due to the ecstasy of seeing Krishna, still a trace remained in their minds. In this mental state, they began to speak. So verse 16. The gopis said, I think I should read this. Sing it. Shri Gopya Uchhu Bhajatana Bhajantyeka Ekaita Vipavyayam Novayamscha Bhajantyeka Eka Nobruhisahubha. Gopi said, some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate toward them, while others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. Yet others will not show affection toward anyone. Dear Krishna, please properly explain this matter to us. So this is purport, polite question. The gopis want to expose Lord Krishna's failure to properly reciprocate their love. They were very disturbed when Krishna left them in the forest, and they want to know why he caused them to suffer in these loving affairs. So if you have your flip chart, you can follow along. We have a chart on these, chapter 32. I hope you have it. I hope somebody gave it to you. I don't know. I did have it ready before I left.
It's there on the window.
It's on the window? The new ones? Okay. So I hope so. It is there.
Yeah,
1032. Okay, you can hand it out. So three types of lovers, the gopis are saying. Which one are you? The first type reciprocates affection. Only if you give affection, then they give it back. So that's conditional.
Bargain.
The second kind show affection even for those who are indifferent. So those are unconditional lovers. So the first type is conditional, the second type is unconditional. And the third type has no affection for anyone. So they're saying to Krishna, okay, are you the conditional lover? Only if we do something, you'll do it back? Or are you unconditional? Or are you indifferent to us? Which category are you? So they're a bit angry and they're asking this question. And the acharyas have a lot to say about this. So we'll read a bit from Vishwanatha Chakravarti on the 16th verse. Middle of third to last. So the third to the last, we won't read the whole thing. We'll do the third to the last. Because the gopis were feeling the same sentiment within each of their hearts, they all reflected in a similar way, and the gopis of similar mind spoke, "O most intelligent one, O Krishna, please answer this riddle of ours. There are some people who only respect those who respect them. Their respect is conditional. They give respect expecting something, and if they do not get that, then they no longer give respect. This is conditional love. Quite to the contrary of this, there are those who give respect to those who do not respect them. They have unconditional respect. Not expecting any results for themselves, they have unconditional love." So conditional, unconditional. "The third type of people are those who do not respect anyone, whether that person respects them or not. There is no question of conditional or unconditional love here. Those persons are indifferent. Hatred and enmity are also non-reciprocation, so persons who are hateful and inimical also fall in the category of non-respect." Though not clearly mentioned here, it will become somewhat evident in Krishna's answers. The gopis said, "Krishna, please say something to explain this matter as to who reciprocates with whom and who fails to do so. You should answer correctly, sadhu, without deviating from the subject." So again, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I read these verses already, but one particular verse is applicable to this. The sorrowful song-like crying made Krishna reappear to flood them with pure ecstasy. The answer he then gave to their questions proved his indebtedness. May that Lord protect you. So now we will read from a book by Sri Ram Swami called Na Pariyeham. This whole book is just on verses 16 to 22 of this chapter. A whole book just on these few verses. The questions of the gopis and the answers of Krishna. I'm not going to read you the whole book, but I will read some excerpts from here. Earlier, when the gopis were feeling the torment of separation, their songs of sorrow caused the entire forest of Vrindavan to stand still. The flowers, trees, birds, and forest creatures wilted in distress, and their tears transformed into waterfalls that nourished the silence. Now that Govinda and his consorts had met once again, the vines, bees, deer, and fish, showered by the nectarian vision of that reunion, were revived from their inertia. They sprouted in happiness and blossomed with new life. The cuckoos sang sweetly on the fifth note, the bees hummed like the veena of Cupid, and the peacocks meowed as only they could do. Thus Vrindavan Forest, freshly bathed in moonlight and gently moved by the wind, joyfully offered her deer, birds, and bees as embellishments to Sri Krishna's pastimes. So when the gopis were crying, all the Vrindavan Forest was wilting. And now gopis and Krishna are together again. The forest is sprouting and it's very joyful. So the forest follows the moods of the gopis in this particular pastime. Seated among the gopis, turning his attention to the forest, Sri Krishna greeted its creatures with a smile. Welcome, my dear birds and gentle deer. Are you happy and well? O Naga, Madhavi, and Malati vines, is everything well with you? He's talking to the creepers. Charming bumblebees, by your singing you appear to be exceedingly happy. I surely hope you are. Responding to her master, Vrindavan pleased his senses with her innumerable attributes. Her singing birds caressed his ears. Her cooling breezes soothed his skin. Her ripened fruits satisfied his tongue. Her dancing moonbeams entertained his eyes. And her exotic flowers gratified his nose. So while Krishna is sitting with the gopis, the forest is not simply standing there and doing nothing. It's also engaged in satisfying Krishna. During their pastimes within the groves of Vrindavan, so now this is on the gopis' love here. During their pastimes within the groves of Vrindavan, they had directly witnessed love's ability to bring Achyuta under control. This otherwise spoiled prince of Braj, who, like a maddened elephant, knew no restraint or discipline, became a submissive servant under the influence of their prema. Recently, however, the gopis had observed a new dimension in Krishna's dealings. Previously, he had been kind. Now he was cruel. Formerly he was responsive. Now he was ungrateful. Earlier he was loving. Now he was aloof. Such unexpected behavior troubled the gopis, marred their pride, and shook their womanly confidence. After all, what gentleman would call for his beloved only to send her home again? What gallant would show his affection and then abandon his darling in the dead of night in the jungle? What hero would neglect his heroine and show no remorse at her tears? This was the inconsistency of a situation initiated by what appeared to be a well-wishing autumn moon. So a little bit more. So now Krishna is going to speak the answer to the question of the gopis, questions. So this is describing the scene in preparation for Krishna to speak. Who in Vrindavan did not perk up their ears to better hear the reply of the crest jewel of all clever persons, Sri Krishna? Although trees, creepers, rivers, and stones are said to be without perception, In Vrindavan, these laws are surpassed in the service of Govinda. Any abilities, attributes, or for that matter, anything desired for his pleasure is automatically granted to the residents of Vrindavan by his internal potency. The myriad leaves on the trees, the countless stars in the sky, the innumerable birds and beasts, the inestimable waves of the Jamuna, and the unlimited varieties of living entities, both moving and non-moving, and the beautiful gopis at whose lotus feet all beautiful things, including Krishna, ultimately take shelter, turned to that most proficient champion of articulate speech, who, with an alluring smile that brought a grin to the lips of all, and lips to those who had none, took up the challenge of providing answers to the gopis' love-laden riddles. So now Krishna is going to speak his answer, and this verse will be the answer to the first question of the gopis, verse 17. I think I should sing these verses. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Mito bhajanti ye sakya swartai kanto yamahite natacha sahidam tarama swartartam tad hinan yatam. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. So the first question, what about those people who just love because they expect something in return? So here is his answer. This is not friendship. This is not religion. And there is no real affection. It's selfishness. It is simply selfish love. It's not real love. In Krishna book, Prabhupada says, in answer, Krishna said, my dear friends, persons who simply reciprocate the loving dealings of the other party are just like merchants. They give in loving affairs as much as they get from the other party. Practically, there is no question of love. It is simply self-interested or self-centered business dealing. Even those without a tinge of loving affairs are better than these merchants. What a heavy statement, Prabhupada says. Even if you have no love, it's better than somebody who just is like a business lover. You give me this, I give you that. And that's how it is in this material world. And that's why there's so much divorce. Because it's all based on this selfish, self-centered concept of love, business dealing. Before they get married, they make the statement of how they're going to divide up the property if they divorce. That's before the marriage, how they're going to divide up everything if they happen. Because it's the statistics are against the marriage. Now, I think in the West, especially in America, it's against the marriage lasting. So they're practical-minded, business-minded. Yes, I get the house, you get the car, I get the kids, whatever. Yes.
Statistic is that 45% of the marriages, first marriages break, 65% of the second marriage break, and 70% or 80% of the third marriage break.
Okay, 45% of the first marriages, where is this now?
In America.
45% of first marriages break. 65% of second marriages break, and 70% or 80% of the third marriages break. I was just reading something that was written by an Indian. It's Vikas Bhakti Vikaswami, and he was studying traditional culture in East Bengal. And so this one young man from East Bengal who spoke English, he met somebody. He went to the West, and somebody in the West said, how can you have these arranged marriages? And how can you not know the person before you get married? And the Indian person said, no, we have love after marriage, not before. So you people, you have love before marriage, but then the marriage finishes. We have love after, and the marriage lasts. And so that was what his answer was. I thought that was a pretty interesting answer. That it's not, the marriage is not simply a matter of attraction on the physical level. And then if it's gone, then it's over. That's a commitment. It's a duty. It's a service for devotees. It's a service. So this was the answer of that person. It's not a selfish thing. They're much more serious. Of course, now in India it's happening like that. Again, divorce has come to India. They want to follow the West, so they are following. And they're getting all the problems of the West. So the gopis, again, these are indirect questions the gopis ask Krishna. They didn't say, oh, you're so neglectful, you're so ungrateful, you're just business dealing, you're this, you're that. They just asked, what kind of lover is it? What is it about? Some people are like this. They reciprocate those who are affectionate. Others even are affectionate to those who are indifferent. And those others will not show affection. You please explain this to us, Krishna. This is indirect question. Again, it's rasa, indirect enjoyment. So they're trying to trick Krishna into admitting his fault in not reciprocating with them. These are tricky questions. Very tricky questions. Which category are you is what's behind these questions. Which one are you, Krishna? Are you that selfish lover? Or you don't reciprocate at all? And so his devotees are angry and they want to chastise him. And so this is actually reciprocation between the gopis and Krishna. Anger is a manifestation of their love for him. They're angry because, you know, he was away, he left the rasa dance. And Brijan Prabhu says they didn't think, oh, I'll go home and I'll get someone else. They didn't become inimical or find another source of pleasure. They were just thinking, oh, for the pleasure of Krishna. And so they were tested. They were tested. Actually, Krishna tested them. Here Brijan says, Krishna has rubbed them with the touchstone of his activities so we will understand what love of Krishna is. So the test, what is the test stone of true devotion? Whatever happens, you feel like you're in the embrace of Krishna. So this is the gopis. Whatever happened, they did not desert Krishna. This is the epitome of the last verse of Shikshastaka, that you may make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You embrace me or trample me under your feet. Still, I love you. You are my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So this is the love of the gopis. And unless Krishna disappeared, we wouldn't really see. If they were just enjoying the rasa dance, then what would we know about their love? So he disappeared to show us what is real love of Krishna. Madness, they became mad. They meditated on Krishna. So this is, as Brijan always says, it's like the love of the residents of Vrindavan, like gold purified in 100 flames. So he makes another interesting analogy here, that in sadhana bhakti, then we are being purified. And when we do our sadhana bhakti, we melt, our selfishness and anarthas come to the surface on the top. So when we boil ourselves in sadhana bhakti, we boil our heart, the anarthas come to the top. We have to scrape them off and throw them away. We don't want to let them stay and come back down in our heart. So in sadhana bhakti, this happens, that our attachments, our selfishness, anarthas, come to the surface. So Brijan says that's the time to scrape them off. When you see them, when you recognize, oh my God, look at that attachment I have, then okay, off it goes. As Bhakti Tirtha Swami would say, there was a time when I kicked my false ego out the door. So, and as Brijan would say, leave your mind out the door when you hear these pastimes. So when we do our chanting, when we do our sadhana, our mind comes to haunt us and to betray us. Our false ego betrays us. So we have to find out what is our real self, what is our devotion to Krishna. So what is the price? Unalloyed devotional service with nothing added. So I'll read a little bit more from Napariye Hum. The title of the book is Napariye Hum, I cannot reciprocate. Oh, I cannot. It's just I cannot. I am unable to repay you. So that is from the last verse, I think, verse 22 of this chapter, the last verse, where Krishna finally admits defeat. We'll hear that tomorrow. So we'll hear some more things here from this book, which are very nice, about these verses. Verse 17. Their vanity wounded by his neglectful dealings, the gopis inquired whether Sri Krishna was a motivated lover, an unmotivated lover, or a callous ruffian. Now, they take the word sakhis, which, yes, sakya. Krishna answers with the word sakya. And so this word is analyzed by the acharyas. By sweetly addressing the gopis with the word sakhis, did he not declare his genuine friendship with them? Oh, yes, there is no doubt. Furthermore, he defeated their idea. He is indifferent and unsympathetic. How could one be a friend and yet callous? This is the second implication of the word sakhis. So then, Krishna meant to say, my dear Sakhis, you are my dearest friends and most intimate companions. How can you accuse me of loving you for gain? Or worse, trying to deceive you? Do you really think I could exchange sentiments of love with my dearly beloveds like a capitalist? In this verse, Krishna has answered the gopis' first question, what kind of lovers give affection in proportion to the love they receive? So in all his answers, Shyamasundara evaluates the lovers mentioned by the gopis and suggests their inability to attract him. According to Krishna, those who show affection to solicit love are merchants. Little good may be said about such men, although they make much ado about their dealings. So they may be profusely be outside, they may be very affectionate and give people things, but actually, inside, they just want something in return. So, love motivated by a desire to enjoy its fruits is but a pretense. If incorporated into spiritual practice, such so-called love becomes cheating religion. The entire scope of ritualistic sacrificial activities promotes such profiteering. It is this very irreligion Arjuna rejected in favor of devotion saturated with loving ecstasy. So one more paragraph. Understanding Krishna's wisdom. So here's a summary of the whole, what Krishna says on this verse. Adoration for the sake of adoration, the returning of favors, and mutual affection do not constitute real love. Those who embark on such relationships are entrepreneurs and their activities are devoid of true spiritual merit. So this is the answer to the first question. It's obvious. It's only to benefit themselves that they want to love. But this is not love. So in this world, lust is mistaken as love. So this verse explains most of the love that goes on in this world. That there, it's just a business dealing. I like you, you like me, you give me this, I give you that. It's a mercenary exchange. And so if we really deeply study these verses, then we can understand the difference between lust and love. So the first verse is very similar to lust. Verse 18. Pajanya bhajcha yeva karana pitaro yatha dharma nirapavarotra sahiram chasumajama. My dear slender-waisted gopis, if some people are genuinely merciful, or like parents, naturally affectionate. Such persons who devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them are following the true faultless path of religion, and they are true well-wishers. So answer to the second question, which was, others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. And so Krishna says, yes, this is the true path of religion. And if you serve those who even fail to reciprocate, and there are people like that, like parents. The parents, they are attached to their children, no matter what the children do, pretty much. It's, yeah. But the children, they don't feel that same love for their parents. They leave home. They do what they want. But at home, their parents are always constantly thinking about them, worrying about them. What are they doing? Where are they now? And so the parents are one group of naturally affectionate person. Prabhupada says, better than the first class is the second class of men who love in spite of the opposite party's contrariness. Such sincere love can be seen when the father and mother love their children in spite of their children's neglect. When Guru Kuli came to my house, I think it was yesterday, and we were talking, and she asked if I knew her mother. And I said, oh yes, I know your mother. I know her from Bombay. And she said, yeah, but I don't think about her much. I don't even have her picture with me. Whereas the mothers, they will have the picture of their children in their wallets and whatever on their desk. But the children, they're different. They don't reciprocate. And we find that. Oh, is it true, Parvati? Yeah. That the children are very independent. But we still have attraction or affection for them, no matter what they do. So that's the mother's love. So that is one type of karuna. There's two types of karuna. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur will explain these two types in his commentary in verse 18. Krishna here answers the second question. Those who honor those who do not honor them are showing unconditional respect. They are of two categories. Those with family relationship, such as the father and mother, and those who are merciful by nature. Specifically, the merciful are the pure devotees, like Prahlad Maharaj, who manifest unconditional mercy. So if we hear the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj in fifth canto, remember what he said about, there was one beautiful prayer where he prayed for the envious people of this world. Anybody know, happen to know? It's, may the envious people be pacified. Swasti. And then, so they may have devotional service, is that it? They take to devotional service. Let them be pacified. So they're actually merciful, two types. One type is the parents, other type is the pure devotees, who are very merciful, karuna. They are called karuna. Both these types are not concerned with personal gain. Whether they are happy or miserable, they continue to reciprocate with the other person. And even after death, they do not give up their respect. Among these, the pure devotees are the best. The mother and father are second class. The religiousness, dharma, of both these classes is faultless, nirapavada, because it is free from expectation of material results. Their undying friendship and pure love, sahrida prema, is also faultless. Then he goes to talk about the word sumadhyama, implies indirectly that the middle madhyama question of the gopis is the most excellent su. So su madhyama also implies the middle question that they ask. There's three. And so this one's in the middle. It's the best because they apply to dishonorable examples. The first and last questions are not as respectable. Or it can mean, has another meaning. The middle answer actually is directed towards you gopis, who are the personification of the middle question's answer. So they're personification of unconditional love. So when he answers this, that these are the unconditional lovers, it can indirectly, it may imply them, or it may imply that the middle question, that your middle question is the best. So these are tricky questions of the gopis, and Krishna is answering them very wonderfully. That he condemns first those who want more than they give. And, of course, this is the second one, actually. They want more than they give. So the children, they want more from the parents than they give the parents. So this is an unbalanced equation here. So spiritual life, Virajan Prabhu says, begins with Sharanagati. And Krishna, in Srimad Bhagavatam, actually Srimad Bhagavatam itself is removing this cheating propensity. Right from the beginning it says that we kick out all cheating religions, dharma prochita kaita vatra. So here we are getting the essential points of what is true religion, what is true love, because religion means love of God. So in order to understand true religion and true love, then we need to scrutinize these questions and answers between Krishna and the gopis. And then we will understand what is actually religion, what is actually prema, what is love in this world. Even what is lust, the first one, we understand. So now a little bit more on this verse from Na Paraye Hum. In verse 18. Krishna said, selfish love is but a mutual exchange among cheats. It possesses neither true intimacy nor virtue. I have nothing to do with such deceit. On the other hand, that love which showers compassion and affection upon even those who are ungrateful is truly virtuous. However, these noble characteristics of saints and parents remain within the circle of worldly love. Of course, Vishwanath doesn't agree. He says, pure devotees are the actual karuna. While they generate pious credits and stimulate an affinity for spontaneous devotion, they are far removed from the ecstatic love that attracts my heart. Therefore, I have no connection with such dealings. While mothers and fathers love their children without motive, their love is only for their own offspring. So we heard that if you were in Bhagavatam class today. It was about those who have affection for sons and wealth, and you only have affection for your sons and your wealth. Of course, some people may have affection for everyone's wealth, but you're most attached to the wealth you have that's in your bank balance or in your pocket. You're attached to that wealth, and if you lose it, then you think, oh, I've lost it. But some people, of course, are attached to everyone's wealth, and they try to get it. But we're attached to our own children, and we don't consider others' children with such an intense attachment as we have for our own. So that's why the love of the parents for their children is not the best, because it's only their own children. But Shri Krishna is mother and father of all living beings, thus his love is for everyone. How therefore can he be compared to worldly parents? So this is the Acharya's commentaries woven in here. So who can get this love of Krishna? Everyone is an eligible candidate, but only those eager for his affection cast aside the playthings of the world and open their hands to embrace the gift of love. Sri Krishna's affection is equally available to all, but only those devotees who have endeared themselves to Hari by their steadfast attempts to please him obtain that love. There's a verse by Queen Kunti. Anyway, I remember the purport more than the verse. In the purport, Prabhupada says that Krishna wants to be merciful to everyone, but not everyone, but some people are reluctant to accept the mercy. So these are the materialistic persons. They are reluctant to accept the mercy coming from Krishna because they think, I might lose something. If I surrender to Krishna and just love Krishna, what about my family? What about my children? What about my job? What about this? What about me? It comes down to. So pure love, the gopis, they are not thinking like that. They are completely open to Krishna's love and affection. Those arrogant fools who remain averse or indifferent to him are raised and nurtured by Govinda's nursemaid, his material nature. Thus, being everyone's parent, Krishna exhibits his unlimited love according to the inclination of his children. So, unlike mundane parents who nurture their own offspring, Hari loves all living beings, but his affection is directly bestowed upon his devotees, whereas it is only indirectly bestowed upon his faithless dependents. So his mercy is open for everyone. Sun is shining on the house of the Chandala and the house of the king. But you have to open your windows and open your doors and go out in the sunshine to receive it. So these are some points in Krishna Prema. Verse 19. Now we're going to hear about... So we heard about two kinds. And now we're going to hear about more kinds of lovers. See, according to my chart here, we've heard about the business ones and the karuna. Now the third type is the neutral. And of the third type, there we'll find four different categories of those who are neutral or indifferent. So I'll sing the verse. In the last two lines, we'll hear these four categories. Bhajitopi navaike chirpajan ebhajata kuta akmarama hyaptakama akrita gyaguru tukuha. Then there are those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, materially fulfilled, or by nature ungrateful, or simply envious of superiors. Such persons will not love even those who love them, what to speak of those who are inimical. Port. Some people, being spiritually self-satisfied, do not reciprocate others' affection because they want to avoid entanglement in mundane dealings. So atmaramas, they go to the forest. They go for their own spiritual life. Other persons, so these are the atmaramas, the sages, the yogis, they are atmaramas. So they do not reciprocate others' affection because they don't want to get entangled in mundane affection. Other persons do not reciprocate simply out of envy or arrogance. And still others fail to reciprocate because they are materially satisfied and uninterested in new material opportunities. So like Bill Gates or these people who have a lot of money, they are this category, aptakama. They have all their desires fulfilled. They don't need anything. Lord Krishna patiently explains all these things to the gopis. So we have our chart. We'll be discussing these categories now of neutral people. Self-satisfied, atmarama. He has satisfaction within. Number two, aptakama. They have already obtained their material desires. Number three, akritagya, ungrateful. Now, of the akritagya, guru, there are three types. Guru druha, inimical. So all of these are guru druha, inimical to one who supports them. So one is alpadroha. There's a reason why he's inimical to his guru, to his parents. He has some reason, some cause. The second one, no reason. Inimical to those who are protecting you for no reason. And the third one actually betrays and does something envious towards their protectors. These are the three types of guru druha. So I'll read what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. Since some persons do not respect or respond to those who respect them, what is the question of respecting those who do not respect them? And so they don't even respect the ones who love them and respect them. There are four types mentioned in sequence from greater to lesser. First is Atmarama, who delights in the self alone and forever looks within. So he may not even see if you're trying to love him or reciprocate with him. He's just in trance within. He's just seeing the super soul, or he's seeing Krishna within. The second type is the aptakama, who though seeing externally has satisfied all his material desires, therefore does not seek enjoyment from others. He said it, he's had all his desires fulfilled, so why should he look for anything more? The third type is the ungrateful person, akritagya. Even though they desire sense gratification from others, they do not recognize when others help them. They're not grateful, they don't say thank you. They're ungrateful. Fourth type is the guru druha, who is inimical to his superiors. He does not acknowledge what others have done for him, and rather shows excessive hatred towards them for no good reason. Those who have a reason for being inimical are called alpa druha, a lower degree class of guru druha. In addition, those who show hatred toward one who renders protection are guru druha, and those who are injure one who is faithful are guru druha. These three types of guru druhi are those who do not respect others. In this way, we have had one example, selfish person, for the first question. Two examples, Prahlad, mother and father, for the second. And six examples for the third, making a total of nine examples. You got that? In case you don't, you have your flip chart, so it's okay. So I'll read now from Nand Vrindavan Champu. Maybe. My notes are a bit ambivalent here. I think this will be read tomorrow. So we'll read from Napariyaham. Where all these different classes are described. Atmaramas are those peaceful sages who exhibit full mental and sensual control due to continuous meditation upon the Supersoul. Being self-satisfied, they have no interest in the external world. For them, the love and affection of the worldly-minded holds no attraction. They are like the immovable Himalayas, fully established in themselves, independent of anyone else. Okay, that's the Atmaramas. So, is Hari such an Atmarama? Krishna is Atmarama, but he's not included in the category of Atmaramas he defined. So we're having all these answers, but which one is Krishna? Which one is he? Is he Atmarama? He's not in that category. Bhagavatam Shloka, beginning Atmaramas Chimunayo, can be explained in many hundreds of ways. Although Krishna must certainly be self-satisfied, being the super-soul from whom Atmaramas gain their qualities, he cannot be compared to any of them. After all, he's omniscient, all-pervasive witness within everyone's heart, but the Atmaramas of this world are limited beings. So why is Krishna not Atmarama? Because he's omniscient, he's super-soul, and the Atmaramas are getting all their qualities from him. Furthermore, as the benevolent benefactor of every living entity, Hari is not indifferent to the needs of the countless jivas throughout his creation. Does he not fulfill the desires of everyone? How can the allegation of indifference be levied against him? So even though he may be Atmarama, he's fulfilling everyone's desires. So how can you say he's indifferent? He may be Atmarama in one sense. Krishna is self-satisfied due to possessing unlimited self-sufficient opulences. But whenever he savors the love of his devotees, he comes to hanker for their service and renounces his station as the topmost Atmarama. So although he's self-satisfied, although he certainly is without material desire, he abandons that position of being self-satisfied to enjoy with the gopis. So that's the Acharya is answering the question for us. Aptakama. Sri Krishna is... Oh, here's a summary. Okay, we'll read the next one. Aptakama. One whose every desire is fulfilled and consequently requires nothing in this world is known as Aptakama. Like Atmaramas, they are indifferent, but unlike Atmaramas, they take refuge in the external world instead of the super soul within. So this is the difference between Atmaramas and Aptakamas in this world. They have everything. They don't need anything. Of course, Krishna is also described as Aptakama. And he has everything, but still he wants the love of his devotees, such as the gopis. Now the next one, Akritagya, ungrateful. There is not much to be said about ingrates. Although capable of reciprocating the love of others, they are distracted by sense objects, so never consent to help those from whom they have received benefit. Their natural characteristic is ingratitude. So this is a very important point. Gratitude, I think I must have talked about this before. I heard this in our retreat this year. Gratitude is a stepping stone to prema, the first stepping stone. That we should be grateful to Krishna, we should be grateful to our guru, we should be grateful to everyone who has helped us in our spiritual life. I know one guru, because I read his journal. No, it was not his journal, it was somebody else's journal describing him, that every morning when he wakes up in the morning, he offers obeisances to all the acharyas, and after offering obeisances to Krishna, all the acharyas, the Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya, then he offers obeisances to his godbrothers or godsisters who have helped him in his spiritual life. So this is gratefulness. This is an example of gratitude.
Who is he?
I don't know. The name was not mentioned. I just read the journal and it says, one of my godbrothers who visited me has this practice. So I don't know who that is. But it's one of our guru godbrothers who has that mood of humility and simplicity and gratitude. So it's wonderful for us to see these, to hear about these things. This is what real love is. In the 1960s, we all of us children rebelled against our parents. And there was a familiar saying in that time, I don't owe you anything. I didn't ask to be born in this world. The children were often saying that. And so this is, yes. So they don't understand what a great opportunity it is to be born at the time now when this movement is all over the world. Especially children born in this movement have a great opportunity. So here also we're understanding, we have this opportunity to understand what's behind these words of Lord Krishna and the gopis by hearing from the acharyas. So we can understand what is real love, what love isn't, and where we are in this, which category are we in this list of lovers. Do we love Krishna conditionally? With a list, I'll surrender to you, but conditions apply. Certain conditions. I will give you my pure devotional service, I'll give you everything, but don't take this away and don't take that. And don't make me do this or that. Otherwise, I'll surrender to you completely. So we have this. Our mind doesn't allow us to fully surrender to Krishna. But by hearing about this, then we can understand what it actually means. What it actually means to love Krishna. And so this chapter will enlighten us in this Krishna Prema. The last chapter, all these chapters of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, like the five life airs, are enlightening us what is true love of Krishna. So we'll stop here. Anybody has any questions or comments on these verses? Yes. Okay. We have a win-win relationship, and we have... So you're saying a lose-win relationship is not good. It can be acceptable in times with family members or for some time.
So, but here it seems that Krishna condemns the win-win person, saying that one who tries to build mutually beneficial relationships
yes.
is selfish.
Selfish, yes.
Merchant.
Yeah, that's a very interesting comment, that Krishna is condemning the win-win relationships.
And the lose-win is glorified.
And the lose-win is glorified.
So,
mm-hmm. It seems that the lose-win is glorified and the win-win is condemned.
Of course, the win-lose...
Win-lose.
The third category is condemned even more.
And the win-lose is condemned even more. Even,
yes.
One who only thinks about himself.
But still, it seems he argued quite well that the win-win relationships are quite healthy.
Win-win relationships are quite healthy, that both sides benefit.
Yeah, but here it seems that Krishna doesn't accept that.
Seems that Krishna is saying he doesn't accept that.
Do you have any comment on
that? Well, I would just say that what came to my mind, the first thing that came was that no matter what they do, because it's Krishna, the Supreme Lord, it's win-win. Because if you look at it, we are very insignificant specks of Him. And if we can have some relationship with Him, even if it's lose, if we look at it from the perspective of lose-win, if you have like a particle of dust and then you have a huge mountain and the mountain is going to love you, the particle of dust, then even if it's lose-win, I mean, you may get only a fraction of the mountain's reciprocation, but it's going to overwhelm the particle of dust. It's going to overwhelm you because of who you're relating with. He didn't comprehend the relationship with God. That how, you know, a tiny, tiny particle of spirit, atomic particle, can reciprocate with the whole. The whole. So even if you get, I mean, if we got the whole, we couldn't take it. Even if we do a lose-win relationship with Krishna, then we will win. Because even, actually, Prabhupada, he says that if Krishna takes away from you with his 10 hands, what can you keep with your 2 hands? And if he gives you with his 10 hands, what can you accept with your 2 hands? So in that sense, if you have a relationship with Krishna, it's going to be much more than win-win. Even if you conceive, if you think of it from your point of view, it may, or outsider's point of view, it looks like lose-win. It looks like it's lose-win, but actually, it's much more than win-win, because he's going to give you so much more than what you have. But of course, in this case with the gopis, we will see that Krishna is going to admit that, yes, no, this is, I could not reciprocate. But then later on, he will reciprocate, becoming Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He will repay them. So, yes, he's criticizing this win-win in the material world. So we always have to make the distinction between material dealings and spiritual dealings. So in the material world, win-win is the best, it seems. Of course, from their point of view, unconditional love is better of the parents of the pure devotees, because they are the saints. They're sacrificing their happiness for others. And so if you look at it at a materialistic viewpoint, then you will see that win-win is the best. But if you look at it from a higher level, then what is this? Artha Shastra. Stephen Covey is like Artha Shastra. So if you go to Dharma Shastra, if you go to Rasa Shastra, then you're going to get a much higher level of perception of benefit. So I would say, yes, he's an acharya for Artha Shastra. Like, who else? I don't know. Who are these people? But who? Chanaka is also Artha Shastra. Hitopadesh. These are Artha Shastras. That how to benefit yourself as well as others. Equally, how to rule, how to divide, how to make friendships. But they don't put in the factor that Krishna is 100% and we're just like 1/1,000,000,000 of a percent compared to him. So if we're going to have even any type of, if there's a win on that on his side, then how can we even accept the 100%? We can't even begin to accept what he can give us, even because we're so, you know, who are we? And now we're even worse because he's trying to give us a little bit and we're closing ourselves to it. So, yeah. The lose win. It's not lose win because these saints, they are also. It looks like, okay, I'm sacrificing for others. The parents are sacrificing for their children. The pure devotee is sacrificing for others, but what he gets in return is not something that you can measure in the material world. They can't measure the soul. They can't measure the love that Prahlad is getting from Lord Nrisimhadev that nourishes him and makes him act like that, that he is willing to accept this lose-win relationship with all the other people. So they can be benefited. There's no concept of this type of relationship in this world that anybody would have that desire to sacrifice himself. Like, what is that, Vasudeva Dutta? He said, I will take the sins, let me go to hell and suffer. And all the others, you please liberate them. So who has this concept of this type of unconditional love? And this is the gopis. They are being indirectly referred to in this verse, that their love is the highest, that they're willing to sacrifice everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And we hear from Chaitanya Charitamrita, though it looks like lose-win, actually they enjoy thousands of times more than Krishna. How is it possible? And that's why Krishna had to become Radharani. So he could see what is that love that she's feeling that I'm not getting. I'm enjoying. Okay, I'm feeling some pleasure, but I don't see how they're enjoying much more than me. So let me become Radharani and I will also understand what is that love. Okay, another question? Bye-bye.
I'm just going to add to that as well.
Not
to make it any better, I mean, just to comment, is that when you're giving selflessly, which is the best, then there's a process of doing it, isn't there, which is giving the shastras, that we don't approach those who are beyond.
Yeah.
We help them in a way by.
We discriminate. We avoid the envious people. Yeah, only Prahlad Maharaj can deal with the envious, like his father. We are advised not to approach the envious people and not to instruct the holy name to the faithless. Instruct the glories of the holy name to the faithless. Yes. You find some devotees are extravagant and crazy?
Oh, definitely.
Well, then you have your choice.
No, but I mean, it's
nectar of instruction. Well, I'll tell you about helping people. You shouldn't help anyone unless you're hired. You know what that means? You don't give free advice. But if someone wants you to help them, then you can help them. And that's how the brahmanas are. They don't interfere, they don't intervene, because they say, well, they didn't ask me. So you can study nectar of instruction, the fifth verse. There are those who have chanted the holy name of Krishna. You offer respects mentally. Those who have taken initiation in worshipping the deity, you may offer obeisances, make friendship. And those who are non-envious and are always thinking of spreading the movement, non-envious persons, you can serve and worship.
Atmarama, it sort of sounds to me like it's sort of like glorifying, like Krishna's not putting that down. It's not saying they're selfish or something, but we're sort of saying that's impersonal. But I don't understand why that's impersonal, because someone could be completely satisfied. I want to read the Bhagavatam, I want to chum around, I want this, I don't want to go for pizza, or I don't want to talk to anyone. I've got all these services to do. So why is that impersonal? Or it's not impersonal?
Why is it impersonal? Your question is, why is Atmarama considered to be impersonal?
Yeah, well, I'm saying, to me, when I read about Atmarama, like in the Krishna book, for example, I thought that position seemed glorified, that that would be the best position to be in, that you're self-satisfied, that you don't require anything from anyone, because
in your last life you were Atmarama.
That's why it's non-devotional. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So why is Atmarama? Why must Atmarama be non-devotional? Why must it be impersonal? That's your question.
Yeah. That's really
okay. Well, like what the? Yeah. So if when we're reading Bhagavatam, we're understanding it through the Acharyas and their understanding of the word Atmarama. And their understanding is that it's a type of person who leaves society and he's satisfied, he's always meditating within on Super Soul. So that's there. Now, if you try to apply it to our devotee society, who is an Atmarama, somebody who is always engaged in Krishna's service, and he's happy meditating on Krishna, so how... Well, why would that mean he's impersonal? What would the behavior of an Atmarama be in the society of devotees? So that seems to be more your question. Would it be that he would avoid all society and avoid all social dealings? Would he just, as you say, you know, don't go for the pizza or whatever? And you know, if somebody is talking prajalpa, he'll run the other direction. What is his actual behavior? So that's your question. So I'd like to show this question up to the class, actually, first. Adi Purush.
Where does it say that Brahma must be impersonal?
Yes. Okay, good.
So many examples of devotee Atmaramas.
Okay, very good. So it's not impersonal.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't think it was impersonal.
Yeah, just from today's readings, we got that impression that it was impersonal.
Specifically made a point of it, but it just seemed to be in the...
It seems like that's...
Because it was described that they want to avoid entanglement.
Yeah.
That's why you would conclude that it's on the verge.
Yeah, that was the description. They want to avoid material entanglement.
That's good for a devotee to avoid material entanglement, because you need more time for serving Krishna.
Right.
You don't want time for anything else. You need time for serving Krishna.
Good.
There has to be entanglement with other devotees.
But not to the point where you lock yourself up in the room and or go off and just chant. But, I mean, that's for some people, they can do that. Some people can do that. But the point is that it's a preaching mission, so you don't avoid the preaching in the name of being an Atmarama. Oh, I'm satisfied. So our movement is a merciful movement. It's a compassionate movement. So some people are less advanced than we are. So therefore, we're compassionate to them. We're a preacher. So that the danger may be that, oh, I'm just thinking about my own spiritual life and I'm not concerned for others. That's where the danger could lie in being an Atmarama. But we see from our society that those who are advanced, they're preaching. They're concerned for everyone. They're concerned for the devotees. They're concerned for the non-devotees. They're concerned, even though they may be Atmarama, they may have already achieved a very high level of advancement. Prabhupada, actually in his lecture in 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he had the yogis, as soon as they got super soul realization, they should go out and preach. They shouldn't just sit there looking at the super soul in their heart, meditating. We should go out and preach. And so that's the only danger I can see. Yes. How's your japa, Prabhu? Did you see what Krishna was wearing today? Yes.
Well, Srila Prabhupada said, as this Mataji does all the time, he really wanted to please me, distribute my books. And preaching is the essence, you know, the book.
Right.
So it seems like, and Prabhupada mentions that all the tribulations in society is due to three things: not being pleased upon seeing one more advanced in oneself. Hmm. Like you, I feel you're more advanced than I am, so I'm very pleased. Trying to be pleased with instead of envious, but actually I am pleased with you. And not being compassionate about those who are less advanced, and not becoming friends with one's equals. These
okay. So being compassionate and those who are less than you, being happy to see someone more advanced. And what was the third one?
Making friends.
Making friends.
With your equals.
Okay. Yeah, that is how you can be happy in this world. It's a verse in Bhagavatam. I think somewhere in 7th canto, maybe. There is a verse that says that. Or 5th canto, I don't know. I think 5th. 5th or 7th. How to be happy and peaceful in this world.
What is that verse in Nectar of Instruction about how to, loving, 6th loving exchange?
Didati patigrinati. Huyamakyati prichati. That you give and exchange gifts, you give and exchange prasadam, you inquire confidentially and reveal your mind to each other. 6 loving exchanges.
Just to clarify about Adi Purusha's question, just because you answered that to refer to the dealings with Krishna, but this section, Krishna's not talking just about dealings with him, he's talking about dealings. So are we allowed to use this as a blueprint for dealings, or is it specifically meant to be about Krishna and his relationship with us, or just Krishna and his relationship with the gopis? Because you answered that's based on what Krishna gives,
yeah,
but I was thinking of it as a blueprint for our
Yeah, it can be. I mean, well, he is glorifying unconditional love. And he's rejecting the first and the third. Guru, of course, Guru Juha, envious of your Guru, that is rejected. And he's rejecting the business dealings, and he's glorifying unconditional love. Yes, it is a blueprint. Unconditional love, that's what we're trying to achieve in our Krishna consciousness movement, trying to be unconditional lovers of Krishna and the devotees. So it is a blueprint.
What's that, one who doesn't reciprocate, nor is one inimical towards one who gives? In other words, is that I was getting under the impression that's also a little better than the bargain lover. In other words, he does, you keep giving, 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 and they keep taking.
Yeah, it is better.
Yeah, that's not really Atmarama, is it?
No. Atmarama is in the last category.
Yeah, you're satisfied. You don't care whether anyone loves you or doesn't love you. But you're always trying to help others.
Yeah, that's the best, unconditional. It's the second one.
That's the real
merciful,
one.
Karuna. That is Karuna.
But like it was explained, that the parent example, you may actually be giving, 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 but you may be waiting to get back. You may not be doing it selflessly.
No, it says there.
You get some parental love, like I see that with some parents.
Yeah.
They're giving, giving, but they actually want.
That's merchant then. That's merchant. But the real parents, I mean, that's not that example. I mean, some parents are in the merchant mood. But some parents are genuinely unconditional. That they just give their love no matter what. And so that's not what you're saying. What you're saying is not in that category. That's in the first category. They do expect something back.
Mike, I just have one quick question. I think you'd be the person to ask. It's a bit irrelevant, but it's important because I told the person I was going to ask. A person taking Mahaprasadam, if they walk, if they're walking, never heard, is that offensive to take prasadam, Mahaprasadam while you're walking?
I heard that it's not offensive, but it's bad for your digestion.
That's what I thought too. I never heard it was.
You have to ask them wrong. What shastra they got it from. It could be. I mean, who knows? Before. It could be an offense. For all we know, for all we know, it could be. You know, check Hari Bhakti Vilas. Uh-huh. I think it's good if you do research about that. check. Yes.
Just thinking that how can we apply this unconditional love in this world? I was thinking about seeing Krishna in all living beings.
So how
do we see?
How to apply unconditional love in this world, how to see Krishna in all beings. Well, we can understand that by seeing the life of Srila Prabhupada. How he did not limit himself to India. But he saw, even though when he arrived in Boston, he said, this is a hopeless place. These people are not going to listen to me. Just please, you make my words powerful. And so the way to see Krishna in all beings, of course, is to engage them. Okay, they're Krishna's energy, but somehow they're away from Krishna. So we engage, Prabhupada said, let me engage them in Krishna's service. Let me somehow make them chant or give a donation or read a book. So that's seeing Krishna in all beings. If you hear the lectures on chapter 6, verse 30 and 29 and 30, then he explains that concept. That's one who sees me everywhere and everything is me in me is very dear to me and I am dear to him. And I'm never lost to him and he's never lost to me. Prabhupada explains that concept, that you see the tree, you don't see the tree. You see it's Krishna's energy, and super soul is there, the soul is there. And the preacher, he will see people, and he will say, oh, it's the spiritual energy, but it's being misused. It's not being used in Krishna's service, so therefore I should try to engage these people in Krishna's service. So that would be the madhyama level of seeing Krishna in all beings. And I'm sure in your paper, I didn't finish your paper yet, I'm still reading your thesis on compassion, that you must have something to say about that what is real compassion. And this is adding to that idea of compassion, that the true karuna is the pure devotee, and unconditional love for all living beings. So he didn't know us. Even though we were complete strangers, and Prabhupada went, he saw Krishna in our hearts, and he chanted the holy name, and he ignited that fire from our heart, the dormant love of God, which was lying in our hearts. And so he came and he ignited that with his chanting and his love. And so then we also wanted to do the same thing for him. And he said, if you want to repay me, then you should preach. If you want to repay what I've given you, you should preach. Some people say as long as you're not on the liberated platform, you shouldn't preach. Yeah. Some people shouldn't preach. That's true. Yes, we are not on the liberated platform, so we cannot preach. But there is a loophole there. Prabhupada's on the liberated platform, so we can beg his mercy and read his books and repeat what he says. And then we can preach. If we only know one thing, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saraswati was preaching that, a little four-year-old girl. So she was not liberated, but she could preach. Yeah.
So God, we can see from Bhagavad Gita, it appears that Krishna doesn't share this view, because he says,
Nachatasman.
He's saying one who explains the Kima Yiparankara. He says, one who explains this supreme secret to my devotees, he will attain pure devotion and will come to me.
Yes.
So he's not liberated yet, but Krishna is very happy with him.
Okay, yeah. So there we have it in Bhagavad Gita. That is Yaidam Paramanguyam Madhbhakte Shabhidashiti. So he's saying that, so if my devotee teaches this to Bhagavad Gita to the devotees, he will become a pure devotee and will come to me.
Of course, there are some, he's discriminating whom to tell.
He's discriminating. So the devotee may not be liberated according to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, because he's one who preaches is very dear to him, and he will become liberated, will become a pure devotee, and will come to me. There is an indication there. Yes?
Just to comment. Mm-hmm. She said of a liberated person and preaching. Since 2001, I'm preaching together with Prahlad Nandamaharaj.
Prahlad Maharaj.
In the Balkan states.
It's in the Balkans.
8 years, we are going to 8 countries together. And Maharaj gave to us first a lecture in the Bhagavatam in the morning. And then I speak after him, 10, 20 minutes. In the evening, the same, Bhagavad Gita class. And after that, I speak. But then after the class, Maharaj gives me his comments. And he says what I did wrong, and what I should improve, and what was all right, and how to preach according to Siddhanta, what is understood by previous acharyas. So although I'm conditioned and understand that I make errors, but I'm being trained in it. I'm very, very grateful to Paramahansa Maharaj that he learns me how to preach. Because preaching according to Siddhanta to the conclusion is not an easy thing. That's my experience.
Okay, so you're saying that actually it's good to have some training, and it's good to have feedback, and you're grateful for that, that you're getting feedback on your preaching.
Also from your grid and Bhujan Prabhu, because by hearing every year, I'm improving in my preaching.
Okay, so hearing Bhagavatam also improves in your preaching. There's things you can do if you're not a liberated soul. There's things you can do. Vishal Prabhu says, for all you CD listeners, that even though we may not be completely liberated, we're on the liberated platform if we follow the instructions of the spiritual master. That's a fact.
Because one devotee there during kirtan, everyone, Hari Bol, jumping in the air, Jai Radhe, and so forth. And one, I think Prabhupada asked, why you're not jumping in the air? Oh, I don't feel sincere, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, do it anyway, you will be sincere. In other words, we may not be liberated, Prabhupada instructed us to preach.
Right.
Whether we're liberated, fully liberated or not, preach.
Dhammada Krishna had a question. Long time ago, do you still want to ask the question?
No, I can just one thought on this prasad.
It's almost time, isn't it?
But I saw one devotee, for example, chanting Gayatri and eating, so...
That's a new one.
So I thought
chanting Gayatri and eating at the same time.
It would be offensive because...
That might be offensive.
...to concentrate on what we do.
Yeah.
And then maybe we will also chant more than chanting and eat. Maybe whole lifestyle is...
Yeah, I saw one Guru Kuli chanting japa and playing kartals with the other hand. That's a new one. Yeah, so we have these anomalies in our society. What's the difference?
Yeah, is there a difference?
Because is there a difference?
Just
is there a difference between Prabhupada's exact words and rephrasing it in your own words? Someone failed their Bhakti Shastri exam because they copied literally from in their all their essays. They didn't they didn't say that this is from Prabhupada's books. They just kind of repeated. They didn't say, I don't know.
Yeah,
who that was, but they didn't say, this is from Prabhupada's purport, this is from here, this is from there. But they just verbatim copied the books. And so I was asked, well, should you give, should this person get credit? Or some one person said she should get zero, one person said 40%. I said, well, at least she repeated Prabhupada's words. That's a good question. There are people who say that Prabhupada's own words are the most potent and the most. But then Prabhupada says in the beginning of Bhagavatam that Shukadev, he spoke he was like a, he's Radharani's parrot, but he didn't speak like a parrot simply repeating. He added his own realization and that made it sweeter. So therefore, if the person is unmotivated and pure in his attempts and doesn't want to just get a crowd around him, then it could be quite okay. But then at some point he should give them Prabhupada's books to not just have them hear what he has to say, but it's, as long as it's faithful to the original, then it's okay. Yeah.
Prabhupada insisted that we speak from our own realizations,
mm-hmm.
not that we don't preach and that we only sell books.
Yeah.
We have to speak from our own.
We have to speak from our own realization.
Classes.
Yeah, he was seeing on, Prabhupada was seeing on the level of glorifying Krishna. That for the glorification of Krishna, for respecting Krishna, then we should receive more respect and more pay than the others. Okay? Okay, Prabhupada's books are rephrasing.
Is that from my humble position, from what I've heard, is that I haven't heard from any devotees who don't have their own, I mean, probably the very advanced devotees, and I'm included in this, but most devotees who I hear preaching, is that they will put their own impression on it, you know, like their own sort of conditioning, and because we all have our own tastes, our own personality, we're destined to do that. Like, for example, we had some home programs, and one speaker would come, and he was very much speaking Prabhupada's philosophy, but in terms of like Christianity, and you could see that that was his background, and therefore he was afraid to present. Well, my impression was he had to present it within that parameter,
yeah.
You know. So whereas somebody else, they won't use the word God because they're thinking, oh, everyone's sort of a bit, you know, in the Western world these days, we don't like to use the word God, so they won't say God. Whereas Prabhupada is, he's presenting, I mean, he's his own personality too, but he's presenting it as we need to hear it without those conditions.
Yeah.
So unless someone's very purified and is an acharya themselves, then they're going to have those trappings, you know, they're going to have those limitations to the way they can present it. So in that way, Prabhupada, I mean, sometimes I read his writing and I think, why does he do it that way? Why does he present it that way? And then I think, well, he's an acharya, he knows best. It's cleaning my heart. I don't know how to make a cleaning machine, but he knows how to make a cleaning machine, and he's cleaning me now, so I'll just trust it. And so that was just my comment.
And sometimes even ISKCON, they get these ideas. I know my one of my friends is preaching in Bombay, and they said, you want to preach in the colleges? We're teaching time management, and here's the PowerPoint presentation, and this is what you have to speak. And so he's Prabhupada's disciple. He said, I can't preach like this. I wasn't trained like this. He says, I can't preach on this time. So he said, no, I won't do it. Then they said, okay, well, ask the teacher. It's okay if you just teach the philosophy. So they asked the teacher, and he said, yeah, okay. So then he went, and it was a big success. And then he met the principal, and she said, yeah, you can teach Bhagavad Gita in our school. And it's just like, I don't know, it's very strange sometimes to have concepts that you have to teach them stress management, time management. This is how we preach in the colleges. But anyway.
No, that's the theory. A lot of people, they say that we can't be Hare Krishnas anymore. But
yeah, I know. This is India.
You have to preach, you have to wear plain clothes.
This is India, India, the land of Krishna.
Yeah.
At least in India, you should be able to speak about Krishna. Yeah.
When you mentioned about Satguru Maharaj saying you should sell these books for a good price,
mm-hmm.
So where do we draw the line between? We should, you know, a Brahmin should take respect in it. You know, he shouldn't want paying for his service.
Mm. Where do we draw the line?
You know, we do charge for the books, so it seems like it's two levels of understanding.
Yes. Prabhupada, sometimes when he spoke at the university, he asked, you know, they asked to give him, you know, donation, and the university paid him. And so it's a matter of respect also. If you give it free, then nobody will take it seriously in this world. I mean, you also have to be, you have to be expert in the dealings of this world. It's not, I mean, that's the impersonal concept. They won't touch money. But not our Vaishnavas. Of course, the Yukta Vairagya is there, but sometimes it gets out of hand, but then you have to see in your heart if it is. Are you in the level of, what is it, Taranga Rangani, where you're enjoying the benefits of bhakti? Or are you actually doing it for Krishna?
Mm-hmm. In Perfect Questions and Perfect Answers, Srila Prabhupada mentions about your question that they give a dollar or some donation that can protect them from going to hell. Mm-hmm. Save them, because donations in Krishna consciousness, Chanaka Panda says, three things you should never give up. Self-improvement, knowledge, and charity. And you can protect them when they give a donation. That can protect, because it's so powerful. Krishna consciousness, they're giving some money to Krishna. Mm-hmm. So potent, you know.
Good.
Yes.
We have to stop now. We're over time. So we'll see you all tomorrow.